Welcome to Zen Mind, a podcast featuring talks from Zenki Dilo Roshi, the guiding teacher at the Boulder Zen Center in Boulder, Colorado. If you are enjoying these talks and you would like to dive deeper into the topics discussed by Zenki Roshi in this podcast, consider becoming a premium subscriber. This will give you access to recorded Q&A sessions related to each talk, as well as previously unreleased talks from our intensives. Becoming a premium subscriber helps to support the continuation of the podcast and Zenki Roshi's teachings. Learn more about it by clicking the link in the show notes. As always, you're welcome to join us live for these Dharma talks. You can join us online via Zoom or in person. You can find a link to our website with the Dharma talk schedule and more information also in the show notes. Now here's Zenki Roshi.
Hello. When someone asks me, why do you sit zazen? If I'm honest, I don't have an answer anymore. I think I used to. It used to be something like, I'm being very coarse and general here, right? You fill in your own life. Something like, I'm depressed and I want to be fully alive. Or it might be, it wasn't like that for me, but it might be, you know, I'm anxious and fearful of things and I want to be confident. I'm confused and I want to kind of penetrate through to who I really am. I don't know what I'm doing. I want to have more clarity. Or my mind is totally a total mess and, you know, I need to clean it up. And exactly how we're led to meditation is a little bit unclear. You know, things happen, you know somebody, you read something, you try it out, you see that other people are doing it, you feel a certain kind of encouragement or I'll try this, you know, like that. Now, once I've gotten into it, I had various ideas. I noticed myself, you know, I noticed the kind of unpolished edges in myself. And I felt like I could be a kinder, more compassionate person, like in my case. So then you have, it's like, I call this an instrumental view of meditation or zazen. You're using it as an instrument for something else. It's not wrong because I think it's necessary to begin that way. It certainly was for me and, you know, for most people, I think it's just that way. But as you practice this, you recognize over time the limitations of this instrumental view. And then maybe, I feel like that's what happened for me, is like at some point you just don't think about why you're sitting anymore, you're just doing it. It's like part of living your life or expressing your life. It's maybe if somebody has the practice of walking every day, which many people have, like they don't go on a walk and think about, well, why am I walking? You know, they'll just do it. So zazen becomes something like that over time. You just sit. Because that's what you have been doing. And how it makes sense is becomes actually kind of unclear. there are these stories, koan stories, that are basically a version of, there's this monk, he or she has a question or some kind of statement about Buddhism, and then the teacher just like whacks them. Or grabs them by the nose. Ah! You know? Or shouts, you know? What is this about? Maybe you think like, okay, so once you're whacked, you know, you get like some jolt and it's like big insights occur and like now you figured out life. I think we have some idea of this, like some, because, you know, somebody gets whacked and then they're enlightened and then you think like something has happened, right? They've had a big insight. So anyway, we, in our lineage, we don't whack people, we don't shout, we don't grab people by the nostrils. You know, I always imagine it's like, whoop! What? It's like, geez, what's going on with you? All right, so what happens? I mean, you can feel a certain kind of intensity now that I've like enacted this a little bit. So what is like you're jolted out of your like foggy discursive mind into what? What are you invited into when you're whacked, or when you hear a sharp sound? What are you whacked into? What's going on? Yeah. Small sacrifice, damaging the floor for enlightening people. What are you whacked into or jolted into? Okay, if I give this a word now, you know, I'm already making a big mistake, but okay, let's make a mistake. Let's call it some kind of presence. Where is this presence occurring? It's occurring here and now. If you're thinking about, oh, no, what's the meaning of life? What's the right thing to do? Where do I come from? Where do I go? You're in discursive land. And then you come back. So if you can understand your zazen as just sitting, as we say, as just being present. Now, if I say presence, it sounds like a kind of abstraction, and it's kind of, yeah, there is this presence, this, you know, sometimes I speak about my experience, this buzz of aliveness, this, you know, your existential presence is palpable. Like, I mean, maybe you feel it in the intimacy of your breathing. Maybe you just feel it in the kind of vibratory quality of your body, of your all of your cells. Maybe in the vividness of color. Now, this kind of vividness or aliveness or, you know, buzz, it's not occurring when you put yourself into the future and what you want to achieve or regrets you have about the past or how great the past was before this problem, this accident occurred or this divorce you went through, you know, you wish you could live like you did in the past. When you have those kinds of, when your mind is occupied with those kinds of thoughts, this vividness and vitality is not there in the same way. So, you have questions about Buddhism, it's also not there. So So you sit with this kind of intensity. Now, I say intensity, but really it's a kind of, what is it? It's an openness. A kind of radical openness, but this radical openness is not separated from the concreteness of this very moment. The causes and conditions of this very moment are included in your presence. You're radically open to, you could say, life as it is right now. That could have a pain, that can have a certain kind of emotional tone, that can be a constellation of relationship. This is what's happening right now, and you are opening yourself to that. And part of, I don't know why, but part of being alive is that this openness to receive the causes and conditions of this particular moment also asks us to respond. Because maybe that's just the nature of time. Your life doesn't stop. It's like, okay, I'm contemplating the present. Okay. I don't know why, but time moves on and you're tasked with carrying the present into the present. You can think about all your problems as a way, as a form of refusing to be open to the present and the response that it demands. You can cling to the past and refuse to face your situation as it is right now because maybe this is a rather subconscious idea, but you know, if these things hadn't happened to me, I wouldn't have to live this present right now. Or you could try to get away from the present by making plans for the future because this present, as you are experiencing right now, is deficient. Something's missing. It is incomplete and imperfect, and you must work to create a more complete present, which only will happen in the future. This is, you know, progressivism. Got to make progress. Why? Because the present isn't good enough. Now, I somehow got myself into giving a series of talks. Nobody asked me to do that. It's just kind of emerging on the everyday dance of form and emptiness. And this radical openness is a kind of emptiness. And I'm exploring the view that in each moment, birth and death are simultaneously present. So in this moment of presentness, we die and we're born. That's a view, and we can explore how useful that view is. Obviously, it's built off of the these existential facts of our biological birth and death. This is where these words come from. We're born, we live, and we die. I've said this often, that I have the sense that in our Western culture, we have a mistaken view of birth. When a baby is born, we welcome the baby into the world. And when a person dies, we are saying goodbye to them because they're exiting the world. But I think a more accurate view is that when a baby is born, the baby is born out of the world. And when somebody dies, they are dying back into the world. In Dogen's fascicle, Undivided Activity, he quotes Master Yuan Wu saying, "Birth is undivided activity, and death is undivided activity." And the fascicle is an interpretation of this statement, or an unfolding of this statement. Birth is undivided activity. Death is undivided activity. I've said in the past couple of talks, if you haven't heard them, you can listen to them on the podcast, that an initial and important understanding of emptiness that is conceptual is that emptiness means impermanence. That all phenomena are born, stay for a while, dissolve, and die. So there's no solidity in the world in form. And that's what we call, that's what it means to say form is empty. In another dimension, conceptual understanding of emptiness is that everything is interdependent. And you could say impermanence is a temporal understanding of emptiness, and interdependence is a spatial understanding of emptiness. At every moment, everything is coming together to make this possible. Birth is undivided activity. All phenomena participate in making this happen. Undivided activity, the Japanese word for that is zenki. Zen means whole or total, and ki means function or activity, or so sometimes it's been translated as total function, or the whole works, or undivided activity. The undivided activity of everything all at once expresses itself as birth. And the undivided activity of everything all at once expresses itself as death. Thich Nhat Hanh says in his, you know, teaching on death, that our true nature is no birth and no death. when you ask yourself, what am I? You have kind of an obvious immediate answer. It's like, well, I'm this person. Maybe you say your name or what you do and what roles and positions you occupy in life and, you know, your values or something. You could speak about yourself in those terms as your, as who you are and what your identity is. I would say that is your form. It's the form that your life has taken. Both your body, your mind, your relationships, all that. And now Thich Nhat Hanh says, but your true nature is no birth and no death. Which is, there's another answer in the wings of the theater of your life. Is like, I am everything all at once, which expresses itself as this life, this personal life. When you have a belief system, as you know, in a theistic religion, and people tell you what happens after death, and you believe it, then you have some sort of maybe seeming certainty about what happens when you die. You go to heaven, you go to hell, you know, that kind of thing. When you drop that kind of belief system, you're like, I don't know. What? Where am I? You know, it's unclear. So sometimes, you know, when people ask, what happens after death? There, you can hear answers like, well, it's like when you die, it's the same as before you were born. Huh. I don't know what that does to you when you hear something like this, but for me it's like, it's a little bit, it's kind of comforting in the sense that what is the problem of death? I don't think death is a problem. I think our fear of death is a problem. The way we relate to it is the problem. Death is just going to happen. You know, you take your last breath and then you don't take a breath anymore. That's it. Maybe that's a little simplified, but simplistic, but okay, let's just imagine this. Like, you take a breath and then you don't take a breath anymore, and that's what death is. But your fear of death could be a lot bigger, and it could rule your life, or, you know, have a huge influence on what you do and how you live your life and feel about it and so forth. So there's the uncertainty of what death is and what comes after it, maybe. And there's also the fear of annihilation, that you go from existing to non-existing, and you don't want that. So if somebody says, when you die, it's like before you were born, it's sort of like, that means I'm already familiar with it. I mean, I've already been in that space before I was born, and then maybe it's not so bad to go back to that space. When you start to entertain the view that you are this person, and at the same time, you are undivided activity that expresses itself as this person. Maybe there is maybe you can find in yourself the willingness to basically entrust yourself or hand yourself over to undivided activity, which, as Thich Nhat Hanh points out, neither is born nor dies. It's just continually transforming. Undivided activity is just continually transforming. It takes this shape, it takes that shape. It expresses itself as this life. It expresses itself as all these other lives too. Now, maybe from that point of view, you can understand why Buddhism problematizes self-clinging. Like, if you identify with your life as this personal possession, then you are creating a problem. If you could, like, release yourself into undivided activity, then there's less of an existential contraction there. Now, something that continually surprises me is like, how do you practice with death? Because it's not there. Like, your biological death is not occurring right now. So how do you practice it? And this is where I think it's useful to add the view that in addition to biological birth and death, which are events in your lifespan that mark the beginning and end of your lifespan, there is momentary birth and death. Recently, a practitioner approached me and said if I would be willing to talk to him about how to integrate being a serious practitioner and being a father. I don't know. I'm willing to talk about it. I don't know if I know that I'm a father. Maybe people think I have smart things to say about that, but yeah. Okay, anyway, somebody asked me that question. Because there can be a perceived conflict of the demands of a child, you know, how to responsibly respond to the demands that a child poses to you as a person, and making time to sit zazen and study Buddhism and in addition go to work and have a family life. And it's like, how do you make all of this happen? But I think it's a reasonable question. And then I found myself asking, first question I asked, are you saying 100% yes to being a father? And in, you know, asking that question, I started to feel the dimension of birth and death. Like, when a child is born, we usually focus on the new potential of this life that I said before, we usually have the view is coming into the world. And the focus is on that. And that's good. But what isn't what doesn't receive much attention is that the parents' previous life is dead. It's over. Actually, it's like that. You are in the act of birth, you are born as a parent, and your adult life as a non-parent dies. Now, women in pregnancy have, you know, 10 months to adjust. Or they're in a 10-month bardo. But fathers, it's harder, you know, your body doesn't go through these changes, and then, you know, you have to bring some clarity to the situation. I talked to my brother-in-law who's visiting right now about this. I mentioned this to him, and then he said, oh yeah, it took me 4 years. It took the birth of another child, he's the father of two sons, for me to realize that I couldn't live the way I used to. So when I ask, you know, are you saying 100% yes to being a father? It's like, it could be that conceptually you say yes, but experientially you're really clinging and refusing this to be reborn as a parent. You could hang on to the life that you had. And like my brother-in-law confessed, it's like, I want to keep it this way. And then you are in conflict with what's actually happening. And so I think some fathers are trying to solve this problem by, you know, just abandoning their children and their family. Because then you don't have to be reborn as a parent, or so you think. Right? But this is just an example of a transition in life in which you die and are reborn as something else. And it's a pretty fundamental shift, but you can imagine other situations in which that happens. You are a different person when you change location and move away from a relational network into a new situation. And to really arrive somewhere else, you have to be willing to let this previous self die. Or else you live with the nostalgia of how beautiful that place was that you used to be in. My father lived with this kind of nostalgia for all his life. He was expelled from his homeland by the invading Russian army, you know, and was 5 years old. And there was always this nostalgia of the lost homeland. And then you don't arrive in the present. Part of, I think, why I'm practicing Buddhism is because I know this energy from my father, and I felt like, you know, you've got to make the present moment your home, no matter where you are. So, now, you can bring this into focus in different ways. You can look at your whole life, how you're born and die. You can look at major transition and crisis in life. Like, every time you feel that a certain cycle in your life has completed and it's time for something new, you can ask yourself, am I willing to die? When an accident happens or an illness strikes and you lose bodily functions, you don't die biologically, you understand, right? But you die as the self that you used to be. And there can be a lot of struggle and grief over what is lost. And the willingness to be reborn into this new set of conditions can be difficult. And yet, when you ask yourself existentially, do I want to miss the vividness of this life as it is right now, or do I want to face up to it? This is the quality of Zazen. Denying, you know, what's happening or wishing it to be different is you kind of realize in this posture of presence that it doesn't make sense. As hard as it may be. Your true humanity actually shows itself in this facing up to how the conditions as they are. When other people witness this ability to face the conditions as they are, it's very inspiring. So even if you feel like reduced in your capacity or in your ability to be useful, there is still this inner mental posture of facing life as it is. And when other people are in the presence of that, it is very meaningful. There's this, in just being present, this Zazen mind, there is maybe what we could call groundlessness. You don't know where you're going. You don't know what the situation brings that you are existentially required to respond to. But our deepest form of saying yes to life is to accept this challenge, to accept this question that life poses to us. Sometimes I think we are trying too much to be in control of our life, which means being in control of our the narrative that accompanies our lifespan, rather than seeing that how our life is meaningful comes from reversing this and saying, you know, what is life asking of me to respond to? And when I am present enough to do that, everything makes sense. So when a child comes, I respond by being a father. When a certain opportunity comes that I consider important, I put myself into it and make the best out of meeting that opportunity, which means something else has to die. So there's this groundlessness of not knowing how our life unfolds. And then there is the concreteness of the form that we give it every moment anyway, right? It's like, here we are in this situation. It's very concrete. You know what to do. If you take it as an abstract question, it's like, well, what should I do? Then you've forgotten that you're just sitting here and listening. That's it. You're just here for this time and listen. It's that easy. And then you're like, well, but is that what I really want? You can walk out, it's fine. Then just do that. It's like, there's so much clarity in being willing to accept the mundaneness of your life and respond and respond and respond, and it becomes very meaningful. Make a meal for someone. Great. So meaning is produced right there in making a meal for someone who you like to spend time with or needs food. It's very meaningful. But if you ask for the meaning of your entire life, it's like, geez, there's no answer. So Zen is not giving you any answers. It's giving you the presence to be present for the concreteness of the situation that you can respond to, and you're fully capable of doing that. And I'm adding right now to this dance of emptiness, which is, you know, not knowing what's coming, and form, the concreteness of this response, I'm adding to this the view that maybe it's useful to give ourselves permission to die for old forms of ourself to really die, fall away. I mean, everything, like the whole past, is stored within the present. That's another talk. But you get it, right? It's not lost. It's like everything that led to this moment is actually implied in it. It's not gone, but yes. So it's just like when you die, your life isn't gone. It lives on in everyone you've touched. But this willingness to let a certain kind of form, a certain kind of structure, a certain kind of configuration of your life, a certain set of ideas, to let them die when it's time for them to die, so that something new can be born that has the vitality of carrying the present into the present and make your life meaningful and worth living. So if you hold on too much, you miss that. If you're too concerned for what will happen in the future, you miss that openness, this fertile place. So the willingness to die and the willingness to be reborn in ways that is outside of your control. We as people, as individual people, are not in charge. Undivided activity, to use that, undivided activity is in charge. The relational complexity that is organized as, you know, the movement of time is in charge of giving us form moment after moment, situation after situation, life. What's the right word for that? You know, the sort of sections of your life. I don't know. Can't think of it right now. Like the big transition I went through fairly recently, a few years ago, my feeling was, oh, this era is over. Sad, and what a relief. New era begins. To be open to see it that way. Thank you very much.